All right. The House Committee on Revenue for February 18, 2009 will come to order. And given the state of the quorum, I believe we'll start with our public hearings. We have a public hearing scheduled for House Bill 2561, and we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2561. Good morning.
Morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. About the background information about this bill, the various sections of Oregon Revised Statutes, Chapter 307 discuss exemptions of property taxes for certain qualified properties. In particular, ORS 307.166, subsection 1 lists conditions under which property tax exemption applies when a property tax exempt public body leases or is granted the use of properties from another property tax exempt public body. The law requires that the lessee or entity in possession file claims for exemption with the county assessor following the filing deadlines specified in the law. What this bill does then is it permits property tax exempt public bodies leasing properties from other property tax exempt public bodies to file claims for exemption for prior tax years by April 1st, 2010. The prior tax years we're talking about in this bill are those years beginning on or after July 1st, 2002, and on or before July 1st, 2008.
Very good. And I note that Representative Beyer is here. Representative.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart and committee. I'm really just going to introduce my people that are interested in this bill, because I'm not going to embarrass myself trying to talk about a revenue bill that I'm not that sure of. I think the intent is, while it is to be able to allow them to go back and get the payments they've made, but is to maybe address a way that this doesn't happen in the future. So with that, I will go ahead and let you call up the rest of the people to testify, but I have representatives from my Wildland Park District, and I also have people here from LTD, which are the two people that are mentioned in this bill. And with that, thank you for hearing the bill.
Okay. Those of you who she is referring to know who you are. Please come up.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. My name is Stefano Vigiano. I'm the Assistant General Manager for Lane Transit District. This bill would allow us to be reimbursed for approximately $89,000 in property taxes that we paid for a park and ride station that we had been leasing from Lane County for since 1977. And as has been mentioned, LTD would normally be exempt from property taxes. Wayne County, as the owner, would be exempt. But when one government agency leases from another, that exemption only is permitted if there is a form that is filed, an exemption form. When we started leasing a property from Lane County in 1977, that was actually before this was a requirement. And we leased it for 30 years at $100 a year. It wasn't until we actually went to purchase the property from the county that the property tax payment issue became apparent, and at that time we were forced to pay 5 years' worth of back taxes as part of that purchase, and that is the $89,000. For us, that is money that comes out of the general fund. It is money that could be used for transit service. It is money that local government school districts that receive property taxes weren't counting on. It is money they will not receive in the future because we now are owners of the property and the property is exempt. For us, it comes at a time when we are in the midst of looking at service reductions despite very high ridership, and so that $89,000 is very critical to us. It would go directly into transit service. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. My name is Bob Kiefer. I'm the superintendent of the Willamette Lane Park and Recreation District in Springfield. I wanted to share with you a little background and then a little bit more about the bill. First of all, Willamette Lane, for you that don't know, is a special purpose district. We're the sole provider of parks and recreation services in Springfield. We are part of a group that we call Team Springfield. It's a cooperative of the agencies in Springfield, including the school district, the city, and Springfield Utility Board. And the reason I bring that to your attention is that we always work in cooperation and trying to do what's best for our community. And as I look at what we're doing on this particular project and why we're asking for this bill, it seems to me that that's what we all strive to do in our governmental positions and in our agencies, that we're all working for the citizens of our state and our community. Wanted to share with you the issue that came up with Willamette Lane, and if, with your permission, Chair, I'd like to have my one little demo here for you to share.
Please. We saw you bringing it up.
Also in your packet, this diagram is there. This particular property that is in yellow is land that we have leased from ODOT since 1998. It provides access to the Willamette River and Island Park, but more importantly, it is the west entry into the city of Springfield across the Franklin Bridges. And most of it, as you can tell, is 1 acre of landscape area that is really just the entryway into the city. Now, as a park and recreation agency, our primary mission is not to provide city beautification projects, but to provide parks and recreation services for all of our citizens. Since 1998, we've been leasing this property. We went to extend the lease in 2007, and at that point, we were informed by the county that you need to file for an extension of your tax exemption for the property. And by the way, there was a clerical error, and there's back taxes due since you first entered the lease, but we can only charge you for the back 5 years. That amount came to $21,700. I tried to negotiate this process throughout the fall of 2007, and I kept coming back to, no, Willamette Lane, you need to pay that. Your lease says that if there's property taxes due, you have to pay that. And by the way, there's no provisions for any appeal. So we ended up paying that $21,700 for land that we were maintaining on behalf of the city and the community, primarily as a beautification spot.
Mm-hmm.
So it came to... It was just kind of sort of a frustration for me personally, but to the district as well, as we took $21,000 that we could spend and providing better youth or senior programs or maintaining our parks, or this costs us about $8,500 a year or a little more to maintain. So 2.5 times that we had to pay back in taxes. That wasn't anticipated by the county, and it's a one-time shot. This bill allows us to be made whole. But more importantly, I think if we look at it from what the future may hold, and as we look at how we deal with these public agency to public agency lease agreements, we should be looking for ways that communities can work together, agencies can work together for the common good without being penalized because in some obscure way you miss the opportunity to appeal the tax exemption. This bill would allow us to continue to operate this facility and would also help reimburse our general fund. I would urge you to support the bill. and continue to look for ways that we can work better together in these common sense approaches to maintaining the infrastructure of this community and of this state. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions for these two gentlemen? I only have one. Did you have attorneys helping you with the preparation of these leases?
Chair Barnhart, this lease was signed initially before I started working at LTD, so I don't know that for sure. We typically do have attorneys look at our leases, however.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, pretty much the same answer. I was not with Willamette Lane in 1998 when this first occurred, and I'm assuming that there was, but I cannot tell you for sure.
Okay. This issue has come up before. And it comes up over and over again. This bill establishes a sort of a window where people can catch up. I'm not sure that that's really a very good solution to the more general problem. And it occurs to me that there are two possible solutions to this sort of a problem. One is to look to the attorney who made a legal error in the preparation of a lease and failed to file appropriate documents with the county. The other is to for us to change the general law so that this kind of situation doesn't actually come up in the future. That has its own problems, which if we had someone from the assessor's offices here, we would learn about. But this is an ongoing problem, and I think that I personally, and perhaps the committee too, would appreciate if as you think about this issue, you have any solutions to the larger problem, we would love to hear them. Thank you. We appreciate it. Roger Martin and Gil Riddell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Roger Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Transit Association. I'm here to support the bill. And you will hear from us later on other issues. This is an incredibly difficult financial time for all of the transit agencies in the state of Oregon. And the two that you heard from one and the other, TriMet, who rely on the payroll tax, are finding their tax revenues shrinking at the very time their service is under heavier demand than any time in history, and they're carrying more people. Lane Transit is cutting back routes. TriMet is considering the same thing, and this isn't a huge amount of money. It won't solve their problem, but it is an important amount of money, and I certainly hope you'll support this legislation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I have a couple of facts to share with the committee and then a request to make. This particular filing requirement has been on the books since 1977. Assessors tell me that non-filings of this type have indeed occurred before, and as the chair has mentioned, but in those instances, taxes were paid rather than seeking special legislation like this. Although the bill focuses on two agencies, assessors tell me that it could forgive as many as a dozen non-filings of this type statewide. Assessors, in answer to the chair's query, assessors need the application to determine whether the possessory use fits the requirements for the exemption under state law. So they have to have an application of some type. My request is that if the committee moves this bill, it be amended to specifically refer to the late filing fee provision, which applies to the statute that this legislation seeks to override. And that is ORS 307-162. It provides for a late filing fee of $200 or 0.1% of the real market value during the assessment year. This bill calls for a late filing, it calls for extra work, and it calls for refunds. It seems that the standard late filing fee, which would apply ordinarily, ought to apply specifically to this bill. With that, that concludes my remarks.
So are you supporting the bill or opposing it or?
Neutral on the bill.
Neutral
it's,
on the
it's
bill.
It's your judgment,
okay.
Committee's judgment. We just would like to have the normal late filing fee specifically referred to in the bill and have it apply.
Do we know what the other 10 or so instances are that would be covered by this bill?
Mr. Chair, I do not. I cannot report that at this point.
All right. Thank you. Other questions, comments? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 2561? I don't see anyone, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2561. And I think we're ready for our work session. Colleagues, today we have two items to consider in a work session. One is a possible bill introduction. Is that you, Paul, on that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll open the work session on a bill introduction. As you recall, colleagues, and I say this every time, but I'll say it again, this committee has generally treated bill introduction as a courtesy. Agreeing to introduce a bill does not oblige anyone to support the bill at a later time.
Mr. Chair, you have four bills before you, or four LCs, I should say, for committee consideration for introduction. I'll just go through them very quickly. The first one is LC 2461, and that is another approach to the issue you discussed yesterday with the elderly medical subtraction. What it does is establish an income level in which the subtraction is phased out. LC 2468 is a three-year 1% surcharge on corporate income taxes. 2470 is a three-year 1% surcharge on personal income taxes. And LC 3504 ends an exemption of the first 40,000 gallons of wine production. So it ends that for the small wine producers. I will add that the last 3504 is at the request of the of Bob Kiravan, owner of Bridgeview Winery. And that should be in the motion.
That should be in the motion. Representative Bailey, are you up for another one?
Mr. Chair, I move LC drafts 2461, 2468, 2470, and 3504 be introduced as committee bills.
Thank you, we'll add the language.
Oh, at the and 3504 is at the request of Bob Kiravan, owner of Bridgeview Winery.
Thank you. Representative Bailey moves the introduction of LCs 2461, 2468, 2470, and 3504, the last of which is at the request of Bob Kiravan, owner of the Bridgeview Winery. Any discussion? Any objection? Don't see any objection, so it is so ordered. Thank you very much, colleagues. We have another work session, and that one, if I can get back to my agenda, is House Bill 2158, and we'll open the work session on 2158. Paul?
Mr. Chair, as the committee will recall, House Bill 2158 comes to you from the Department of Revenue, and it deals with the income tax form, which has a 99 legislation, has a box there that allows taxpayers to elect to donate 2% surplus kicker refunds to the state school fund. There were some issues that came up, particularly with the 2007 kicker, that some a number of taxpayers came to the Department of Revenue and said they were surprised that that they had made the donation when they didn't receive the kicker checks. When we look back on the amount of refunds that have occurred historically, indeed there was a large amount of refunds based on that 2007 kicker. About $6.4 million went to the state school fund. We do have a historical record on the amount. There was, in the 2002 period, following the 2001 kicker, there was donations totaling $2.9 million. We had also had donations over $1 million in the 2003-04 fiscal year, which would be primarily corporate, was $1.3 million. So, but by far the biggest was the $6.4 million we saw following the 2007 kicker. There's a couple of things that you have there with the bill that today, new things. The first is a revenue impact statement that I prepared really just based on the committee discussion. I don't feel confident that I could determine the sign of that impact, positive or negative, but it really depends on the behavior of taxpayers. But I think there is reason to look at this and see if there would be an effect. First of all, if we assume that a lot of taxpayers were confused and this would make it more clear to them, which is really the intent of the bill, make it more clear to them that they are donating, then we would anticipate that perhaps there would be some reduction in the contribution. On the other hand, the bill does have allows taxpayers to designate a top amount so that they would say, a donation not to exceed a certain amount, they can put that number in the box. Then that may increase the comfort level for taxpayers and say, well, there's some maximum amount, therefore I'll go ahead and do it. So I don't feel comfortable enough saying it'll be positive or negative, but there could be some response behaviorally, so we have this down just to indicate we recognize that. I've also, and in my efforts to save on our printing costs, have copied on the back of that a letter from Deborah Buchanan in response to questions that were raised at the public hearing on the bill, and in particular, Deborah's clarifying that the department would not be using percentages, and that came up in the committee discussion, and concern over how taxpayers might be able to interpret that. So basically it says, we understand members' concerns, agree that using dollar amounts would be easier for taxpayers to understand rather than percentages. And, of course, Deborah's here if there are any questions for her. Mm-hmm.
But we should interpret this letter then as the intention of how the department will interpret this bill if it's passed.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And I'm getting a head nod. Right. Thank you. Discussion? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the work that the Department of Revenue has done on clarifying this bill, and I appreciate the intent of the bill. Unfortunately, I do still have concerns about the bill, and in my mind, changing the checkoff to a dollar amount, I think, changes the question that we're asking taxpayers. And in my mind, the box on whether or not the kicker should be donated or not donated is in some sense a referendum on the wisdom of the kicker policy, and that by having a dollar amount box changes it from that to one of a charitable contribution. Is $25 a lot? Is $50 a lot? Is $75 a lot? Is all a lot? I understand the problems with having a percent and the variability there, and that percents can be confusing to some people. But I think that there's more work that needs to be done on this bill to make sure that we are we have a clear intent, that we're going about it in the best way, that we're appropriately distinguishing between what a charitable contribution is and what a donation of a kicker is. I don't know the answer to all of these. It sounds like we have some questions on whether or not the sign of the bill is positive or negative. I think there's some ambiguity, but I think the bill needs more work.
Thank you. Representative Brown.
I have just a question that may be for Deborah, or maybe Paul can answer it, and I don't think it came up when we had the original discussion, but remember back during the last tax filing period with this issue, and there was an issue with the product TurboTax, and I think some other products, but I'm specifically familiar with the TurboTax problem, that people were at least suggesting that they hadn't meant to do this when they were filing their tax on TurboTaxes, yet somehow there was a glitch in the software, or TurboTax wasn't, I don't know exactly what the problem was. I guess my question is this bill trying to get at that problem? Is that TurboTax issue what's driving this bill?
I think we better hear from Deborah.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, to Representative Bruin's question, we weren't able to identify this issue as to being tied to a particular software company. We did hear from a number of taxpayers who had used TurboTax, but there were other software products involved as well. So we did not actually identify a specific problem with any software company in particular, but it is the issue that taxpayers didn't understand that what they were doing was donating a potential kicker at the time.
Let me follow up question with that. With the majority or the entirety of the taxpayers who voiced a complaint about that was not their intent to their intent was not to donate a portion or all of their kicker to the schools. How many of those use TurboTax?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, I think a large number of them did use TurboTax, but then we also received a large number of returns from TurboTax. It is a
right
has a large segment of our electronic filing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
I guess in contrast to the good vice chair to my right, I see this less as any kind of a statement about the kicker and its complications and its efficacy or what we may want to do as far as the kicker issue. I see this bill more as a specific solution to a specific problem that filers have. The kicker is a very complicated, unique thing, and I think there is a lot of misunderstanding when you're filling out forms of the implication, and I think DOR has taken it sort of on the chin when people misunderstand that, and the kicker kicks, and it's a big kicker, and people didn't realize what they were giving away when they made a checkoff, and I think that this is a specific solution to that problem, not anything that solves the bigger kicker issue. And I think that in fairness, we need to give filers this information or this option so that we aren't coming back later and reading about all these people who didn't mean to give away money. I think it causes, for those who are not fans of the kicker, and I realize there are plenty of them around, it gives ammunition if the taxpayers get upset. But that's our charge to deal with the kicker, not individual taxpayers who are just trying to get their tax forms done. So I like this solution. I think it speaks to simplicity. You can check all, or you can check a dollar amount, or you can check none or leave it blank. Those are things that people, when they fill out forms, can understand. And so I would support this bill.
Thank you. Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess from my perspective, I don't feel like we're getting any more, the taxpayers actually getting any more information or being any better informed about the choice that they're making if they're checking a box or putting a dollar amount down. And I can think that there are other solutions to this. You know, when I've been, for me, if a person checks a box and then there's a disclaimer underneath and explains to them exactly what that meant and they sign their name underneath of it, that might actually be a bit more information and a bit more of an overt act confirming what their intention is than this solution. So I guess for me, I see that I think there are other solutions out there. And if what we're trying to do here is to give the taxpayer more information and make sure that they're aware of what their choice is, that there are better options out there. And this one, to me, isn't necessarily the one I support. I'm not sold on it yet.
Colleagues, what is apparent, I think, at this stage is that, and I may be speaking out of turn by saying what I'm about to say, but I think that the committee generally supports the idea that when taxpayers fill out their tax return, the information on the return or in the accompanying instructions should be clear enough so that people understand what they're doing. I think we agree about that. After that point, I'm not sure we do agree. This is the kind of bill that I think may benefit from some additional massaging, and I don't know whether there's somebody on the committee who would, maybe a couple of people on the committee who would like to take a little bit of time to see if they can come up with an amendment that might be helpful. And I don't, maybe Representative Bailey and Representative Berger, perhaps?
Yeah, happy to, Mr. Chair.
Might work to see if you can come to some agreement about it?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to beg off because I like
you like solution. It the way it is.
I mean, I've come to where I think is a workable solution. So, I think somebody should, from my understanding of our discussion,
right.
I think that Representative Bailey's objections are more about the kicker and how it works than. And Representative Call seems to have a suggestion for how to get around this other than a form checkoff. I would be very anxious to hear what solutions he would offer other than this.
Okay.
If we agree on the problem, and I'm not sure if we agree on the problem yet, and that's where I am. So until we agree on the problem, I don't really want to come to the table and offer solutions because I like what's here.
Maybe Representative Bailey and Representative Call should be working on
it. Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my concerns with the bill are not related to the wisdom of the kicker or the overall kicker policy.
Right.
My concerns with the bill is that I believe that the bill may have unintended consequences, that it still does not offer appropriate clarity on the question that is being asked, and I'm not sure that that we are clear on what question is being asked and how that question is being asked.
Your comment raised an additional concern to me about this bill. When you change the thing from a checkoff to a fill-in-the-blank with an amount, that leads. It seems to me that potentially leads to all kinds of problems. If somebody were to put in $5, say, and there was no kicker that year, then that by itself is a confusion. If you put in $500 and that year there is a kicker that amounts to $100 for you, then that leads to a confusion. And if you put in an amount and you end up with a kicker refund anyway because the amount of the kicker was larger than that, then it seems to me that may lead to a confusion in addition to this. At least the checkoff as we have it today is a yes or no. And you raised the issue that perhaps this is a that this perhaps changes the question that's being asked. I suspect that it does, and I wonder if it doesn't do it in a way that increases the level of confusion rather than decreasing it. Yes, Representative Varley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to chime in here. I actually kind of like the solution that we have in front of us. The only thing that I would like to see is where the dollar amount is, I would like to say a maximum of instead of an absolute amount. For the very reason that you bring up, if my kicker is only $100, I only want $100 to go. So a maximum of $500 or a maximum of $50. Is that doable?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, I believe it is. We do have space limitations on the form.
I understand.
Right now the box says, I believe, I want to donate my kicker. So there would be room to put in maximum kicker donation, I believe.
What it actually says is, if there is a kicker refund, I want to donate mine to the state school fund.
So, Mr. Chair, it might read, if there is a kicker, I donate up to, or I donate a maximum of.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that would be doable.
But Mr. Chair, all remains, from my understanding of this discussion, they could check all.
Yes, sure.
So that those people who generously don't care what the amount is still have the option of not having just checking the all.
Right.
I like it. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
don't be sorry. Just to reiterate, I don't think that the voter the taxpayer is any more informed of their action by checking a box and writing down a number. I just don't see how we don't come to the same problem next time around. Fundamentally, you know, when you fill out your taxes, you know, there's all sorts of stuff that comes along with it that I don't think we need to get into. But you know, people are going to check that box and not want to have done it. I mean, there's going to be all sorts of issues at play here, and I'm sorry that I just don't think that this gets at what the problem is, and we can more clearly articulate to the taxpayer what it is that they're doing when they check that box. But this, I don't think, does that. And until we get to a solution that makes it clear to them what they're doing, or more clear, I'm not supportive. And that's my concern.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the two of you to see if you can come up with something that the committee might be able to coalesce around, recognizing Representative Berger's enjoyment of the current
And the two of you mean us two or those
no,
two?
Representative Bailey, Representative Call, who are the ones who have been very articulate about their concerns. And we may very well revisit this issue. With that, we'll close the work session on this bill. Is that 2158? And we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2261.
Mark can stay down. I like that. I've been there before.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2261 deals with the tax credit lenders can receive for issuing below market loans for affordable housing projects. The bill 2261 makes some edits to the statute for the sake of clarity, just by moving some things around and kind of reorganizing the statute 317097. But the policy issue in the bill is a clarification, or it codifies the Department of Housing practice of packaging loans that qualify the lender for the affordable housing tax credit with tax-exempt bonds. Under current practice, they've received an opinion that it's legal to do so, but they have to go through certain steps to get each package approved individually, and that incurs some costs from attorney fees. What this bill would do would put it in statute and eliminate that case-by-case approval process. And so it's a codification of a current practice.
Thank you. Mr. Krager and Laura Lockwood McCall.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Rick Krager, Deputy Director for Oregon Housing Community Services. And after that last discussion, I'm just have a little bit of anxiety here. Forgive me if I'm a little nervous. Mr. Chairman, coming around is testimony for myself as well as Mike Schrader, who is attorney for Orrick Harrington and Sutcliffe, that they provide bond counsel for the department. So in an effort to try to save attorney fees, I actually passing his testimony around today as opposed to having him here in front of you. So I know that the committee that heard this prior did have a chance to hear from him, but again, I'm going to rely on the written testimony. Again, Mr. Chairman, as staff has said, this is essentially a request to codify in Oregon statutes that the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit may be used in conjunction with loans that were funded by bonds issued by the department. And just real quickly, Mr. Chairman, let me provide a little overview and background. First of all, the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit, many of you have heard this before, but for those that haven't, the OHTC allows banks to reduce interest rate on loans for affordable housing by 4%. And then in addition, with that, they may claim a tax credit equal to the interest savings on that. More importantly, the interest savings is then passed through to the property owner in the form of, it must be passed through by the property owner in the form of rent reductions to the tenant. One of the things that we started in 2007 was working with the legislature related to federally subsidized housing projects. And many of you may recall this discussion that there were projects that were funded in the early 80s. These had federal contracts on them, and they were beginning to expire beginning in 2007 through 2015. We worked with the legislature, one, to increase the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit by $2 million in 2007, and then again $4 million by 2008. In addition, we made a change in the the rules that would enable that pass-through requirement to be exempt for these projects, specifically because you already have federal rent subsidies on them and you have very low income rates. So we took those tools provided by the 2007 legislature and went to work. And one of the other things that we looked at was, with our tax-exempt debt that we already issue, could we combine the Oregon Affordable Housing Tax Credit with the tax-exempt financing to get even lower interest rate loans? Typically in the market, let's say you're able to get a 7% loan conventional with a tax credit, that turned into a 3% rate. With tax-exempt debt, you're able to get a 5% loan, which turned into a 1% rate, and it allowed us to underwrite these loans and make these projects work. So that was the question that we asked, can we blend those? So we went to the Department of Revenue, we went to the Department of Justice, and they both confirmed. By looking at the statute, it was clear that, or at least from their interpretation, we would be able to blend the OHTC with tax-exempt or any bonds issued. The problem was that the bond council that is part of these transactions looked at this, and it wasn't explicit in law that you could do this. And so they required an opinion from the state, Department of Revenue, Department of Justice, to say, yeah, every time we do this transaction, it's okay. As you all know, with that, there was a cost associated with it that was passed on to the affordable housing developer. So what we're attempting to do here is to essentially clarify in law that you can do this so that the bond council doesn't have to ask for that opinion every time. And you will see in the written testimony provided through bond council that they have confirmed that this change would not require them to issue an opinion. Mr. Chairman, let me be really clear. This does not in any way change the program. This is something that we can already do, that we have been doing. This is simply codifying so that we can decrease the cost to affordable housing developers. Again, there is no fiscal impact to this, so we request that you support House Bill 2261. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Are you proposing, Mr. Krieger, to put this on the tax form?
As a dollar matter, yes, no.
Just checking.
For the record, through the chair, Laura Lockwood McCall from the State Treasurer's Office, Director of Debt Management. We are supportive of this bill. It didn't really make sense as part of the rewrite of the public finance laws, but in retrospect, this is sort of similar in terms of cleaning up, clarifying state law to streamline things and make it easier for folks to get their financings completed.
And you agree that this doesn't actually change the existing law. It simply clarifies it so that we don't have to get a lawyer's opinion every time we do one of these transactions.
Yes.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard in connection with House Bill 2261? And that's all we're scheduled for today on that bill, isn't it? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2261. And it appears to me as though we've exhausted our agenda.
Oh, darn.
Is that right? We have.
We can talk about the kicker some more.
I think we're finished with that conversation for today. Colleagues, we meet at our regular time tomorrow. We will be meeting at a special time on Friday. The details are still in flux, but keep paying attention to the notices as they are posted. Thank you, and with that, we are adjourned.